Okay, chapter 15. Now you'll notice here they were at Gennesaret. I never can remember how to pronounce that. So we're told that the scribes and Pharisees from Jerusalem came to him. So they traveled from Judea. Now they're in this region of Galilee, and I just to note, we'll just go ahead and read the first 9 verses. They asked him a question: "Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread." He answered and said to them, "Why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God commanded, saying, 'Honor your father and mother,' and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, 'Whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me, it is a gift to God,' or Corban, that he need not honor his father or mother. Thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition. Hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, 'The people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrine the commandments of men.'" He then brings the multitude and explains. Peter says, those Pharisees were offended by what you said. And it's kind of an interesting, this is an interesting chapter. Looking at the outline on the handout in chapter 15, just notice the 5 different sections. Jesus denouncing the Pharisees for their hypocrisy, as we've read, and then explaining his actions to the multitude and disciples in the next section. Then there are 2 sections, or 3 sections, of miracles. So the teaching is what we're going to take the most of our time in looking at the first 20 verses. He healed the daughter of the woman of Canaan. He healed a great multitude, and then he fed the 4,000, which is almost identical to the feeding of the 5,000, so much so that there are modernists that will say, he's just repeating himself, or that's the same event. Of course, they deny that happened, that event happened, the one as far as the miracles go, but there's always those efforts to try to cast doubt or aspersion upon the faithfulness of the narrative, the legitimacy of the narrative. But these are 2 separate occasions. He fed 5,000 besides women and children on one occasion, then shortly after, he fed 4,000 men besides women and children in verses chapter 15. But with those things in mind, a couple of locations we want to make note of. I've already alluded to Tyre and Sidon. They're mentioned in verse 21. After he leaves this region of Gennesaret, he goes up north, probably 15 to 20 miles. We're told from Capernaum to Tyre is about 25 miles in straight line. But it says the coasts of Tyre and Sidon. So that word coast actually is the parts. It has reference to a region. They're coastal cities. But in other words, he left Galilee, went into Phoenicia in that region or area. So Tyre is 25 miles north of Capernaum. Sidon is another 25 miles up the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. Those are the 2 cities that are mentioned there. Interestingly, Jesus, we're told, went out from there and departed to the region. You remember I talked about the fact that he said, "Oh, you have little faith." Then in this section with the woman of Canaan, he says, "How great your faith is." That mirrors almost exactly what happened with Elijah. You remember with regard to Elijah, he was at odds with Ahab. He was an individual that at that particular time in which he departed to Phoenicia, Tyre and Sidon, the region of Tyre and Sidon, he was basically rejected and was fearing for his life and went out of the region in order to protect himself during that famine. He had predicted that famine would come upon the land. Ahab was blaming him for that famine, looking for him to kill him. And so the faith was lacking in Israel, but when he went to the widow in 1 Kings chapter 17, and I can't remember if it was Tyre or Sidon where the widow was. I think it was the widow of Sidon, wasn't it? Go to 1 Kings real quick just so I can make sure I'm getting that right. 1 Kings chapter 17 is where this particular narrative is that parallels Jesus at this time. So Elijah in 1 Kings 17, beginning in verse 9, the word of the Lord came to him, said, "Arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there. I commanded a widow there to provide for you. You remember this was a poor widow. When he got there, she had prepared was gathering sticks to just make a little bit or the last of her provisions for her son and herself, and then she was going to die. And it was on that occasion that the provision was made. We're told in verse 16, the bin of flour was not used up, nor did the jar of oil run dry, according to the word of the Lord which he spoke by Elijah. So here is this widow of Sidon, Zarephath, and she had great faith. She demonstrated that faith because Elijah said, "Hey, you make me this cake, and you will be provided for." And it was all that she had. This great faith, she gave that to Elijah, and as a result, she was provided for. So, kind of an interesting parallel that we find between that and what we find here in our narrative in Matthew 15. In chapter 15 and verse 22, she said, a woman of Canaan came from that region. The word Canaan, that's an Old Testament reference. The Canaanites. And the Canaanites dwelt in this region. Tyre and Sidon was among the ancient cities of the Old Testament. Again, when Elijah was living, Tyre and Sidon was in existence at that point in time. And so that was the old region of Canaan. Now, we talk about the land of Canaan, which is all of the land that Israel inhabited. But in fact, you had the Philistines that were present, and you had the Canaanites that were present. There were different regions that were inhabited by different warring tribes. And this is the area. So, calling her a widow of Canaan rather than a widow of Phoenicia is something that would resonate with the Jews. Now think about this. Matthew, talking to Jewish people about Jesus as being the Christ, told them, in effect, Jesus went up to Canaan, to the Canaanites, which would be the Gentiles that were repelled by God and were worthy of destruction. And he went to them, and that's where he found the faith. So this would be something that would resonate with the Jews that were reading Matthew's narrative, as he referred to it, not a woman of Phoenicia, which was typical of that day, but rather a woman of Canaan that was referred to. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. And then in chapter 15 and verse 39, at the very end of the chapter, the region of Magdala. That word Magdala, does that sound familiar to you? What individual do we know of in Scripture that came from that region? Mary Magdalene. Yeah, and that's a reference to Mary Magdalene. Yeah, Mark chapter 16, there's a reference to her. That's the region where she was from. The thing is, we don't know exactly where it was. there are two words, Magdala here and also Magadan. In fact, if you have a different version, it may read Magadan instead of Magdala. The reason for that is because some of the early manuscripts, let's say most manuscripts, and the manuscripts that were used when the King James Version was translated, render it Magdala. But most of the early manuscripts that were discovered after the translation of the King James Version, so the is that English Standard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The English Standard and the American Standard and some of the other, and the NIV and others, they look at those. And so the Syriatic and Vaticanus manuscripts, they have Magadan. The region is not, we're not for certain, but the idea was, remember what I told you, that Gennesaret was on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee and up above the hump that makes the widest part. It's believed that Magdala or Magadan was probably at that region where it's at its widest, on the western coast of the Sea of Galilee. So those are the individual or the places. We're almost out of time. The people that are mentioned, we just make note of the fact that there is a reference to the Pharisees and the scribes. We're already familiar with them. The Pharisees, of course, that sect that were very zealous with regard to the keeping of not only the law, but also the Talmud. We'll talk about what that is, the traditions of the elders. And the scribes were... A scribe is another word for a lawyer. They're the ones that dealt with the law. They're the ones that copied the law. They're the ones that interpreted the law. So it would be that kind of an equivalent as to our lawyers, as the scribes. So they were very learned individuals, and they had an issue. But the issue specifically, you'll notice there in chapter 15 and verse 1, is with, or verse 2, why do your disciples transgress the traditions of the elders? And I'll just make this note, and then we'll probably be out of time. The traditions of the elders. Remember that Jesus never condemned the Pharisees for keeping the law. In fact, he told his disciples, you need to listen to what they say. Do as they say, not as they do. That they're missing out on the weightier matters of the law. But the tithing, those other things that he talks about, those are things that should be done. He never had a problem with them keeping the law. But what he had a problem with is them binding man-made traditions. And that's what this particular thing will deal with as we discuss it. Those unwritten traditions from the rabbis, the teachers, are things that have been adding up over the generations. And they were at that time traditions in that they were oral traditions. It wasn't until after the temple was destroyed in AD 70 that someone decided, we need to write all of these traditions down. And what they wrote them down in two different books. One was the Mishnah. Y'all probably heard of that. The Mishnah has it means repetitions. And so these were the actual traditions. And then there was another book called the Gemara, and the Gemara was the interpretations of the traditions. And when you hear about the Talmud, the Jewish Talmud, it is the compilation of the Mishnah and the Gemara. That's what the Talmud is. And it's an interesting thing is that Jews today typically follow the Talmud. So they've taken these traditions and they've codified them to where they consider that's the practice of Judaism. But there was, after the death of Jesus, a group that called themselves I can't find where it is. It's in there somewhere. It's the Karaites, K-A-R-A-I-T-E-S, the readers of Holy Scripture. And they argued against the traditions, and they're actually that group of Jews remain today that reject the Talmud entirely and say the only thing that binds us is the actual law. And so they're individuals who are more in keeping with what Jesus said in this regard that exists today. So we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. Appreciate very much everyone's kind attention today.